to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures are up 1075. NASDAQ futures up 2775. Dow futures up 100 as we continue this amazing rally off Monday's sell-off. And we are absolutely punishing anybody who thought that we might actually go down. I mean, we can't wait. Well, wait a minute. I'd love to see the money supply numbers this week. Oh, no. I can't get those. They stopped publishing those because they don't want anybody to see them, Manny. Just saying. Pretty amazing stuff. Hey, I got a question for you. While we wait for Mr. Lou to call, name me the shortest baseball game in history.
Name me the game? Or how long?
I'll rephrase it. What's the minimum number of pitches by a pitcher in a 9-inning game?
By a single pitcher.
Just happens to be the shortest night game in Major League history.
I don't know the answer. If you want me to guess, I would say 70 pitches.
58,
wow.
29 batters. Gave up two hits, struck out no one, which I guess was the key, and threw an average of exactly two pitches per batter.
So he was able to get guys to make weak contact and get out without striking them out.
Yes.
There you go. That's the old Greg Maddux way.
And we pitched to contact, and they just don't hit it very far. And now you got the guys behind you, earn their pay.
Well, now the swing and miss rate is so high in the major leagues, I don't even know if you could pitch to contact if you wanted to.
I don't know. Yeah, you could pitch strikes in these guys.
Yeah.
But no matter what, it's a prodigious swing, because on the other side of the fence, there's people telling you that your agent telling you you gotta hit home runs. I'm gonna guess this is Mr. Lou, so why don't you call him? If you can, because I just got a text from someone, and I'll bet it's Lou saying, "Hey, what's with your phone system?"
Well, of course, the phone lines are down again this week, or at least two of the three are, and I don't have his number, so I don't know if you.
All right. Well, what?
I can come in and get it.
No, I will send him the number. I will do that for a second. So you talk baseball for a second whilst I send him the number.
Well, I can tell you that I was in Michigan City. Which, for those that don't know, it's a little beach town about an hour outside of Chicago that is right near the Michigan and Indiana border, and not that far from the Illinois border, obviously. And so I didn't watch a ton of baseball while I was out there, but I did see the six-run ninth that the Cubs did the other night, which talk about not making contact and yet still scoring six runs. I mean,
is that the worst pitching you've ever seen in your life?
It was just like walk, wild pitch, strike three, you know. What was there? Was there a hit batter in there too?
Yeah, it was a hit batter too.
Yeah, it was about as bad as it gets. And then
it was one hit, right?
Well, and then Ian Happ had the big double down the line. There was also another single up the middle. So I think there was two hits that I remember, but it was mostly just wild pitching and good patience by the Cubs. So I did see that one, but that was about it for what I was able to watch.
Yeah, then last night they had a couple of leadoff doubles. They had all kinds of stuff, and they managed to still not only score like one run. Well, the center fielder grabbed a home run from Contreras, but the bat control of being able to touch the ball when you need it or get one out of the infield or anything like that. And then of course the umpire was having a rough game, which made it even worse. I am ready. Lou, you with us, bud?
Yeah, I'm here. Good old AT&T plays games with your phone lines just like it does with my cell phone.
Well, not only that, I had a chance to at least vent a little yesterday. Not that it was his fault, but we still have for the show to go out. We have a dedicated copper line, right? Which, of course, is frosting the hell out of AT&T. You know, why don't you have a fiber optic line? Well, because the copper line works. And there's been times when we were getting a whole new AT&T system in that we had to use the copper line. You know, we have this all choreographed, so nothing ever hurts a client, that we can back up the whole place with the one copper line. Not the whole place, but surely enough to keep going. And the guy says to me, "Oh, geez, you got rid of this copper line." I said, "Buddy, it's the only one here that works all the time, and why would I ever be dumb enough to remove it?" "Well, geez, you know, these fiber optics are they may be better, but they don't work."
Yeah.
I mean, I said, the last thing you're doing is taking out the one thing here that has worked every single day since you put it in here for 12 years. Just saying.
You and I are both old enough now to have lived through the computer revolution and the rollout of computers and the change that worked in the workplace. But we both know that those things, when they originally rolled out, had a ton of problems. And you know, my younger cohorts would laugh at the fact that I would keep a map in the car. And you know, every now and then just cross check things against a map or against, you know, or have some kind of backup system in place in my office for files, because, you know, I've lived through situations where our firm computer security system would suddenly decide that, you know, access by the people who are actually supposed to be using it was a breach. And so it would go, right, you know, super secure, which meant nobody could get into the files, and it would lock everybody out. And, you know, you see that happen, and you watch the development of things like that over a while, and you start to understand that, you know, technology is great, but you also have to have a backup, and that, the old, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, has a lot of sense to it.
Well, I was having this, long discussion with my niece the other day, because, well, so get a load of this. My brother has a few people over for cookout, so it's on the south side. So she lives like in Bridgeport. And I said, "Okay, I'll give you a ride home." Well, the week before, we don't go to the expressway. We shoot down Western Avenue, taking kind of our life in our hands, but we do it. And we get home. Well, I don't think we even caught a red light. I mean, plus I'm pointing out to her, you know, that empty lot used to be like a factory, you know, that used to be some restaurant, that used to be something else. She's like, "Really? I didn't know any of this place existed." So, okay, this, you know, it's my old turf is up where everybody lived, was on, you know, basically in Marquette Park in Inglewood. And, so of course the next week we go the same way, and we're in like 40 yards of my brother's place. We catch two trains every red light. It wasn't the same grill, but anyway, we get a chance to talk a little bit, and started talking about, you know, efficiency and so forth, and the fact that, you know, obviously I was from an earlier time, and I said, you know, it's kind of odd when you look at things. There should be, it's so obvious how convenient all this stuff is, and yet if you look at, you know, little snippets from the past of how long it took to do something, or how many, you know, bills a Speaker of the House put out in 1958 versus now, there hasn't been any advancement. Well, I mean, it's probably easier for people, but the actual productivity is just not there. I mean, I would bet that if we had Robin back on the phone, and she would call in one day if we asked her, she was the assistant treasurer at Pullman, and I'm going to say that Pullman, with five people in the Treasury Department and a typewriter out front, I'm going to say they did more financings in a year for five people than any other company does now. And I couldn't
disagree more. Only because
I have problems with that. I mean, I can, having watched law practice develop from Selectric typewriters and books on shelves to electronic databases and word processing and IT and information technology, I can tell you that, you know, white collar jobs especially are much more efficient. And I think the decision, I don't know if the decision making is any better with the additional information, but you can certainly get to things a lot faster.
I didn't.
All you have to look at is 10 years ago at the 08 crisis, 07, 08, 09, when every company laid off half their workforce. Same with our company. Every company trimmed every department by like 50%, and the productivity didn't go down at all. And so they said, "Okay, now you're just going to work harder."
I never once said.
Everyone does like three jobs.
Again,
now.
It's not what you say; it's what people hear.
That is what you said.
I never once said that I would want to go back to that. I was the world's horrible, most horse bleep typist. The idea that I could look stuff up in 2 seconds on a commercial where I used to have to walk down to the library, I get it. What I'm saying is, if you look at the overall numbers, they don't show it. And the question is, why? Are people taking personal emails all day long? Are they taking... It should be light years better. And what my point is, if you look at an overall number, it's not. What I said...
I can just tell you that in terms of law practice, people are much more... I'm much more productive. Much
just
more.
It's not like people today are working harder. It's that it takes you way less time to do stuff. Your productivity is probably tenfold per person.
Okay, on Monday, you were not here. I did a little blog on, it took 13 months to build the Empire State Building. From the day the thing was let with no staging, with no anything. And it took 80 hours from the time that the steel girder left Pittsburgh before it was in the building, hooked up. I'm going to say that we could never put a building up right now in 13 months, for whatever reason. I'm the first person. Like I said, I hated typing papers in college. I'm the first person that says how much more efficient I am with all this stuff in front of me. I get it. What I'm saying is, if you look at overall numbers, you would expect a Treasury Department by like the size of Pullman. If they did 8 financings a year, you would think that a Treasury Department today would have 3 people in it, and they'd be doing 10. I'm saying if you look at it, you'll find today that the Treasury Department has 20 people in it, and they're doing 2. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, it's not...
I can give you part of the reason. It's my profession.
Okay.
Lawyers slow everything down, and we've got 10 times, maybe 20 times as many lawyers in the country right now as we had when the Empire State Building was built. And the reason for that is because the regulatory structure around doing anything in this country has exploded. And so every single thing that you do, if you're trying to put a building up or you're trying to do a financing or you're trying to start a business, is much more complicated and much more complex because of these regulatory requirements than it was, you know, even 30 years ago.
Well, I'm searching for the answer. I'm not making.
I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, if you look at what's happened to the Federal Register since the Chevron Supreme Court decision, and you'll hear references. This is one of the things that conservatives hoped was going to be dealt with by the Roberts Court eventually. Is something called Chevron deference. So Chevron is a case that, I think it's Chevron versus the EPA, is a case involving a determination by a federal regulatory agency that Chevron was violating the law or doing something improper. And, the Supreme Court said, look, Congress has set up, or Congress passes these laws, they go into these federal executive agencies, and that's where the expertise lies, and so we will defer to these federal regulatory agencies as to whether their regulations are correct or properly vetted, etc. And it basically created a carte blanche for these federal agencies to start writing regulations in response to laws that were passed to enforce them that couldn't get challenged or couldn't be challenged. And I've gone head to head with this in a couple of situations. Mercifully, in a case involving vaccines, we were able to blow that out of the water. I mean, the courts have slowly modified it to come back and say, well, you know, for example, if the decision that ruling by the regulatory agency doesn't make sense or appears to be go against common sense, then it's not due that deference. But the vast majority of these regulations are. And the problem is, once you do that, again, you've authorized this explosion of intrusion into all kinds of things. So I would tell you that one of the things that slows things down dramatically is the presence of lawyers in the loop, and they're required. because nobody wants to violate federal law. Nobody wants to put their project halfway to completion and suddenly have a federal agency come in and say, "Oh, yeah, you screwed that up. You got to tear it all down and start over again."
Well, I'm actually more than he is willing to believe, Matty. I'm absolutely agreeing with you. I'm asking the question is, how the hell in today's world? I will bet you $1, Randall. Was it $1 or $5? $5.
$1.
It was $1. I thought it was $5. The $5 was the tip, right? $5 was the tip. Maybe I'll go to the movies by myself. Wasn't that they gave him for his work for during the year? He gave the janitor
this Christmas tip or something.
Yeah, it's good with $5. Maybe I'll go to the movies by myself. Well, now you couldn't go to the movies by yourself for $5. But
that barely gets you popcorn.
Oh yeah, but I just happened to be happy to get my passport redone, right? So of course I'm driving in Monday morning, and I hear about there's 2.1 million passports that are behind schedule on. Now I will bet you that there are more people working in that department than there ever have been, with more computers than they've ever have. And how the bleep can they be 2.1 million behind?
Well, that has nothing to do with technology. That's because of COVID and
maybe
people not working.
Well, that's
demand.
But you're making the assumption that they were caught up when COVID started. I mean, why would you assume that?
Well, I guess I wouldn't assume that, but when I got my passport last time, which is about to expire, so however long ago that was.
Ten years.
Yeah, ten years ago. I got it in the normal time. I mean,
what was normal time?
I think it was like 4 weeks or something.
Yeah, all I'm trying to say is once in a while I come across these articles, and one of them was, and this probably talks about what Lou, but you know, the funny part, what Lou just said, Lou's not big on regulation, which neither am I. So everybody's going to pick out whatever their favorite thing they love to hate, being regulation or whatever. You know, I might say, even though I don't have any proof of it, that when I worked for Pullman, I never saw anybody do a personal, well, it wasn't an email, and if you took a personal call, everybody looked at you. You know, so you actually did work for 8 hours, which of course does anybody, you know, do now, but, you sit at your desk for 12 hours instead of 8, but I don't know if you work for 8. Anyway, it had to do with the government. It had to said the Speaker of the House, whoever the hell he was in 1959 when Eisenhower was, I don't know, a Democrat Republican, I don't know the history, that he had, you know, something like 20 or 15 or 18 middle-aged women working for him, basically, with typewriters, and they put out however many bills per year the guy was there, and now they have all these computers and all this stuff, and they have 3 times as many people, and they're doing half as many bills. I mean, maybe they're bigger, maybe they're more complex, whatever.
So you've just caused me to flashback. Have you seen John Wick, Chief?
John Wick.
Movie?
No.
Have you, Matty?
I actually have not seen that. I know what it is, though.
Okay, so in the John Wick universe, and this makes perfect sense because Wick is part of this vast criminal underworld that has these sort of pseudo-mystical trappings. But one of the things that they create in this world is exactly what you just described, Chief. It's a typing pool of these women who are doing everything by paper because they don't want to do it digitally, because that creates a chain that can be traced. It also makes them much more efficient. But they do everything by paper, you know, typed out cards, typed out references. They have a way of alerting their criminal elements through pager, an old-fashioned pager system that, again, makes it almost impossible to trace. But you just caused me to flashback to that, to the scenes, and you see it in John Wick 2, and especially John Wick 3, where... Yeah, you've got these, and of course the women are all recruited, you know, prostitutes and whatever. They're all heavily tattooed. They're all made up and tarted and tarted up as they're doing all this work. But the idea that you would be running this kind of an enterprise, basically using standard typewriters, standard cards, standard pieces of paper, and chalkboards and whiteboards, it is a fascinating world that they've created in this movie, but which I will highly recommend all of them. They get a little crazy in John Wick 3 with the stunts, but the universe that they've created around this criminal enterprise is really entertaining. But one of the things that marks it is the reliance on old-fashioned paper-based technology in order to escape regulation and oversight.
Well, the thing that one of my pet peeves, because I must have drove through the place 15 times last week, maybe more than that, is this burn interchange project. So I go on Wikipedia and I start reading about the thing. I got nothing better to do, right? And of course, it's a $475 million initial project. I'm sure it'll be double that by the time they're done. And this is in today's world, our efficient world. Now, mind you, we were able to, between rail, trucks, and whatever, we're talking 1930 on the Empire State Building, by the way, that a piece of metal left Pittsburgh, and 80 hours later, it was in a building in New York. In a building, ready for the next one to go in. So that's pretty damn quick. Now, I'm reading about this thing, and the whole research for made the federal government essentially, how they justified the project was that the average person, it was one of the biggest bottlenecks in the country, and the average person took them an extra 3 minutes or 4 minutes to go by in a million cars every 2 days or whatever the number is. You know, it's how many lifetimes of wasted time that, you know, this thing has and blah, 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 and how...
Where is this interchange? Is this the
Spaghetti Bowl?
90...
No, the Spaghetti Bowl is now the burn interchange.
All right.
I mean, whenever we said a Spaghetti Bowl, you knew where it was, but now the burn interchange, you know, where's that? No, that's the Spaghetti Bowl. So they go through this massive justification. The thing is going to take 10 or 11 years of working one shift during the week. Nobody works. I went by there last week, I'm going to say probably 15, 20 times. I never saw anybody working. Because the minute I come in the morning, there's nobody there because we're early. When I leave at night, they're already gone, and they're not there on weekends. So this is one hell of a project. So if somebody were to say, hey, you idiot, whoever wrote the first thing, do you realize in the 10 years, now that you've upped the time that's wasting from 5 minutes a car to 20 minutes a car for 10 years, I could absolutely justify never touching it, Lou. I mean, how are you ever going to make back that decade of construction where it, you know, it's absolutely backed up the whole time? I mean, how long is it going to take to average out? A century?
Yeah, well, let me take that and then go to a current event. I know you guys have already talked about Bezos going into space, but, you know, Musk, Bezos, Branson, their successes are a classic contrast to what NASA did and was doing after about 1975, and how that decision making in a federal contractor or state contractor segment is done versus a competitive business, you know, doing the work. Now, admittedly, a lot of the groundwork for all of those guys was laid by the NASA, you know, the NASA development. But the short answer is we now have three companies competing to get into space. And you know, I watched Musk's Starliner crashes and development, where he put those rockets up, flying them, and then have them come down and, you know, hit the ground and blow up when they landed, tried to land vertically. And he crashed, what, two of them?
Yeah, at least two, yeah.
Yeah. So NASA would never, now, would never, ever, ever allow something like that to happen. And especially on television, you know, where it could be broadcast, you know, worldwide. They would never allow something like that to happen. And they would be so risk averse. But, you know, Musk, you know, private citizen, his own money, said, you know what, we're gonna test this thing, and there are certain things that I want to see happen. And if the thing crashes and blows up, well, you know, that's prototyping. The quick development of these systems, the rapid deployment of rockets that land vertically, like something out of Ray Bradbury, versus you know, splashing down the ocean. Bezos landing on land and recovering his space capsule on land.
Lou, that was the design. That was the design in the '60s of the shuttle.
But my point is, these were things that these were things that could have been done early on, but NASA rejected them. And NASA has taken progressively longer and longer and longer to develop these systems. You have private sector coming in, basically doing the same job.
Do you have any
turning it around in less than a decade?
All right, forget your conservative roots there for a second, because this will have to spill over after break. You just uncovered an amazing thing to talk about, and by the way, it's steeped in economic theory. It goes back to Milton Friedman talking about that the idea of a big firm buying another big firm, they might actually be already past the level of efficiency, and it actually makes things less efficient, even though they're going to sell it to people as being more. What happened to NASA in the 60s and 70s and 80s, after Kennedy said, we're going to get to the moon, I'm going to say that the people who were on that team in 69 or 68, 67 were the best and brightest. They worked together. They were a team. There was not a whole lot of frills, I'm going to guess. And I'm just lob this one out there. And after they made it to the moon, and after they kind of had not much of a goal for a long time, in 75, 76, they probably had three times as many people working there. Nobody knew what anybody else did. And it became like a big drug company now that only just buys stuff from other drug, finds out what little drug companies that are actually making some progress in buying those places. And it becomes this big bureaucracy, the same thing that a big company does when there's no competition.
If you look at the stuff that was coming out of the space agency in the 1960s, everything from Mercury and Gemini and Apollo to the Dinosaur Project. I don't even know if you remember this, but Maddie, you can put a link to it. To the Dinosaur Project, which was a reusable shuttle-like vehicle, to the space plane concept, for take off from a runway and climb to orbit, there were literally dozens of very innovative, very creative ideas being generated out of this, the space industry. And they were working with a bunch of younger, again, more aggressive, more risk-taking kind of operation. And they had a specific goal and a specific target, rather than just floundering around saying, let's go to space. It was get to the moon, beat the Soviet Union, get some science done, and demonstrate our capability to generate this technology, which, by the way, will spin off hundreds of other uses and other capabilities.
When we come back, I'm going to tell the real quick story about a gentleman in Notre Dame I had from one of the classes that had been the head of NASA. And he was showing us pictures. I don't know if I still have the notes, where I didn't draw the darn things, but he was showing us pictures of what the space shuttle was supposed to look like. Just what you're talking about. It was a big honking plane, for lack of a better term, that drove the shuttle from a runway up to however high it had to get to where you could drop the shuttle off, and then the shuttle took it the rest of the way, and they both landed. That's what it was supposed to be. The solid fuel rockets were an absolute, said, okay, we want to go faster, we got easy solid fuel. And at the time, he said, these things will end up being a disaster. There will be accidents. And, by the way, it'll never be as efficient. Was he right? There were accidents, and it was never as efficient. Duh.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. As I said, it took it. I'm not saying private industry always gets it right, but what you're seeing in our rocket science right now is a classic example of when or how private industry taking over
Don't. We do have to go to break. Private industry now, Lou, has become the government. Merck is the government.
There's a lot of that, too.
I mean, Merck is the government. Johnson & Johnson is the government. So is Commonwealth Edison. So is Peoples Gas. I mean, they're just as big. They're just as... All they do is go back and forth with Washington. That's their job. S&P Futures up 5. Nasdaq Futures up 25. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Matt Werber. SP Futures up 575, NASDAQ Futures up 26. Maddie, I'm going to play a dangerous game here. I'm going to try and stump the Lou. Lou has enough decency to not go to the computer. What was yesterday, the anniversary of a big name in naval, big day in naval history? We'll see if Lou can pick this one up. I bet he does, but I bet he, I wouldn't, now, can we trust him not to hit his computer?
I don't care about the Navy.
I know you're an Air Force guy. What can I tell you? At least,
yeah.
At least
I mean, a big day in naval history. I mean, today, I believe it is the guy who became the Duke of Wellington kicking the hell out of the French in 1812 someplace called Samalac, something like that. But what's no, it? I don't.
He wasn't
big
on a
day
ship.
In naval history. No, I don't get it.
All right, S&P Dow futures up 34 over in Europe. We're just talking about stuff that he should know this. DAX up 125.8%. FTSE up only 4. Now they were up a bunch yesterday, so they were up 1.5% yesterday. Everybody else only up 1, so I guess they're catching up by not going further today. They're only up 4.7%, 0.07. CAC around up 49.7, a full 0.7. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 159.6. Shanghai up 12.3. They've been up the whole way. Hang Seng, which was down last week when we said something here about don't trust Hong Kong anymore. Well, they're bouncing right back. They're up 4.99, up 1.8. Anybody's buying any dip here, doesn't matter where it is, but that's what we're doing. Dow yesterday was up 2 days in a row now, as of yesterday. I was up another 286.8%. S&P was up 35. So I gotta believe we're up on the week, even after that huge down day on Monday. Matter of fact, I know we're up on the week. NASDAQ up 133.9%. Bonds, up only one basis point, 1.298, call it 1.3. The Bund minus 0.39. It's unchanged. Japan, whoa, up and up towards positive 0.01. So I guess that's up. Oil up 38 cents, back up over 70. 70.69. It was down to 66. So it's rallied back pretty heavy. Brent up 42 cents, 72.65. Natural gas down a penny at 3.94. RBOB up a penny at 2.22. We've got gold down 6 cents, 17.97. Silver down 15 cents, 25.10. Copper up 3 cents, 4.30. It looks like gold is mired at this 1800 number here. I'm not sure why, but it is. Crypto up 141.30. I might say crypto, Bitcoin, 31,881. So back up over 30,000. Somebody was a buyer under 30. Right now it seems to be, you want to be a buyer there under 30. Well, if you're into Bitcoin, that is. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
40 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one major issue in the area, and it's another expressway shooting, which is never a good way to start a morning. But this time it's on the north side. Inbound Edens between Old Orchard Road and Dempster is still closed for the investigation. Traffic is being forced off on Old Orchard on the westbound side. Cars can get back on at Dempster, but the inbound Edens is closed between the two. As police are out, I guess, what, searching for shells and conducting their investigation.
What do they do with all these shells? They never arrest anybody.
Good question. But that's causing major delays, and you're going to want to avoid the inbound Edens, obviously, if at all possible. Outbound side looks okay. Kennedy is looking okay. No issues to report there. No delays on the Eisenhower or Stevenson either. Southside expressways looking good for the most part on the Dan Ryan, but we do have a crash on the Bishop Ford. This is on the inbound side at 130th Street. There's a crash that's been moved to the right shoulder, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown as you navigate around that. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another beautiful summer day. Clouds early and then sunshine later on, a high of 80. Right now it's overcast and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 106 today. Right now it's clear and 83. In sports, not a good night last night for our baseball teams in town. White Sox were blown out by the Twins 7-2. Cubs lost to the Cardinals in 10 innings 3-2. But the Diamondbacks won. They topped the Pirates 6-4.
It's like five in a row for those guys.
Wow.
Which are playing the Pirates.
Well, that helps.
Yes. Anyway, Lou, in July 21st, 1954, Mamie Eisenhower busted a bottle of champagne across the bow of the USS Nautilus. 1954, we had a nuclear-powered submarine. I didn't realize this thing was in service till 1979 and covered a half a million miles.
That, yeah, I mean, that's a milestone, and that submarine is a testament to the force of personality of one guy who basically drove the Navy to act more like a competitive entity with respect to its nuclear sub program than a government entity, and that was Rickover. An example of how a single person within the bureaucracy can, if they get the reins of power in their hands, can basically take over and run an entire program. I don't know if you knew this, but Rickover had to personally interview every officer that was assigned to a nuclear sub for like a decade and a half.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, how the Navy ever allowed some one guy? I mean, fortunately, he was brilliant and you know, the best interest of the U.S. at heart. But how the Navy ever allowed one guy to have this much power? I'll never understand.
Isn't that the concept of the benevolent dictator?
Yeah, but there aren't too many of those guys around. And generally, what happens, and it happened with Rickover, is that you get that kind of power, and it distorts you, distorts your judgment, and you start believing in your own infallibility. And that had some consequences down the road. But our nuclear sub program and the rapid development of our nuclear submarines was laid at the feet of Rickover, correctly or incorrectly, and his personality and his, you know, vision and his expertise, frankly, drove that program to very early successes. And you know, our accidents, we've only had, you know, two major nuclear sub accidents you know, you look at the Soviets who have had one after another. I think is a testament to Rickover's legacy.
Well, he wasn't Jimmy Carter one of his aides or something.
Yeah, I don't know if Carter was one of his aides, but Carter went through that interview process certainly.
Was Rickover was he our guy, or did he come from Germany?
Oh no, he was homegrown.
He went to Annapolis.
Yeah, I believe he was an Annapolis guy, but he was homegrown.
Okay.
He wasn't like Von Braun and the rest of the guys we brought over from Germany after the war to run our space program.
Well, Hitler, he had some skills, but he sure had some that he didn't have. Obviously, in addition to being kind of a butcher, isn't the number that he managed to. Like 12 Nobel Prize winners were able to escape from Europe and make it over here and help us with the bomb and stuff, like Fermi and all of
those guys. I don't know the number, but yeah, you know, Fermi and those guys were working at the University of Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it was
one of my favorite stories is the first nuclear reaction, the first atomic pile nuclear reactor was built in the football stadium, in a squash court under the football stadium at the University of Chicago. And basically, within the Chicago city limits, you had a potential. I don't think it would have exploded, but it could have given you a Chernobyl situation. And with, you know, by the way, this is risk taking.
Oh yeah, well, how big was the
shielding on this thing?
How big was the pile, though? It couldn't have been, what was it, 10 pounds maybe?
I'm sorry.
I mean, the pile couldn't have been very big.
Oh, it was the size of a room.
Oh, is that big? Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was. My recollection is it was graphite bricks lined with a uranium fissile material paste, and they put the thing together, assembled the thing together. They had control rods that were operated by ropes, and people were pulling in and out. So, you know, nuclear reactors. At a very fundamental level, involve highly radioactive material that has been refined so that it's fissile, and will create nuclear fission as the source of heat. And these control rods were like cadmium or another element like that, boron, that you slid in and out of a reactor to control the reaction. They absorbed these neutrons that were coming off the. That were coming off the radioactive fissile material, and if you slid them all the way in, they absorbed all enough of these neutrons to stop the reaction. As you pull them out, more neutrons were allowed to flow within this pile of stuff, and you would get a nuclear reaction and generating heat, and this was all done by hand. And so they put this thing together and then in this squash court and then cranked it up and got it going sometime, I think it was 42. But just the idea, and you know, and the parts were eventually, it was disassembled ultimately, thank God, before it did some horrible thing, and buried out in the woods out where the Argonne National Laboratory is located now. I think they were eventually taken out of there and sent to Nevada or whatever. But you know, you walk around the campus of the University of Chicago near the old football stadium, and I think there's a plaque there.
No, that's where they put
the first nuclear reaction.
That's where they put the library. There's a plaque.
No,
there.
Not where the football stadium was. Did
they put the library went up at the site of an old football stadium. That's the. That was the whole routine. They're the only university in the U.S. that tore down the football field and built a library. It's usually the other way around.
My recollection, having walked around there, was seeing the plaque somewhere, but I thought it was not where the library was. But in any event, that's, you know, Fermi and all those guys came over. I wanted to raise, and then we can go back to, we can go. But this may track us off in another direction. I wanted to throw out a sports theme again for our first hour. The women's soccer team, U.S. Women's national soccer team, lost their opening Olympic match to Sweden, And I frankly couldn't be happier. And I hope that then this is a terrible thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I hope that they collapse and implode at the Olympics. And you know, I wish them no success. It's amazing that our athletes can act in such a way that I you know, I'm actually rooting against them.
What do they do? What do they do this time? I mean, what was the specific? I mean, I haven't even all the headlines have been whether there's going to be an Olympics. Not even our people that are going. So I'm way behind on who's actually there. But I don't know any of the boxers. I mean, I don't know any of the swimmers. Is Phelps not going, or is he in a relay, or what's he doing?
No. Phelps is out of the game and has been for some time.
Okay.
The star. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the star of our swimming operation. We've got some terrific guys in there. But the story for me has always been, since she first arrived at London, is Katie Ledecky, who continues to just dominate women's distance swimming. If she's not, I look at her as the greatest female swimmer of all time.
She's the Janet Evans of our time.
Pardon me?
She's the Janet Evans of our time. Or this
yeah,
time?
Except that she's doing what Evans did, but she's doing it faster, and I think she's going to be doing it for, if she gets a couple, you know, her medals, a couple of medals in this Olympics, I think she'll be doing it for longer. But she is one of those, you know, once in a two or three generation athlete that has just really demonstrated that combination of physical prowess and physical capability coupled with a mental toughness that is unbelievable.
How did Lou, a couple of technical, first of all, I thought Janet Evans still held a record of some kind or did until very recently.
I think Ledecky got all of them now.
What difference, I mean, I know when people talk about everybody's so, you know, bigger, faster, stronger now, I read somewhere, this is back a ways, that if you adjusted Jesse Owens' times, I'm not talking about this guy that's won the last couple. I think he was probably something from Mars. But what's this guy who's won like three sprints in a row, Manny?
Usain Bolt?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
that guy looks.
Yeah, that guy looks. I don't know about anybody. But up until him, I was reading this thing that if you adjusted for the blocks versus, you know, digging a little thing with a shovel and the cinder track for the others, that they thought Jesse Owens would have won like virtually every year up until him, and I don't know about it was before this guy showed up. That, I mean, what kind of an adjustment would you have to make with a modern pool for somebody? What's the longest thing? It's like what, 40 laps or 30 or something? I mean, what kind of adjustment would you have to do time wise? I mean, these new pools are way better engineered, aren't they? I mean, I don't know the answer.
They're better engineered. The blocks are different. I mean, the blocks used to be flat. The blocks are now angled to give you a better push off. I watched a documentary showing the U.S. American women in 1976, I believe, in a relay. And, you know, the philosophy on swimming has changed. It used to be the goal was to come off the block, hit the water as flat as you could, stay on the surface and start stroking and kicking right away, versus what they do now, the deep dive where you actually go under the water, allow your buoyancy to accelerate you upwards at the same time doing dolphin kicks for as long as you can, you know, manage it without losing too much oxygen off of both the starts and the turns.
Those used to be illegal, right? Those were illegal. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do that before, right?
In freestyle you could, but you could swim the whole race underwater in freestyle if you wanted to, but certain strokes would have prohibited that. So example, I think backstroke you couldn't do, you know, that number of kicks underwater. There are other changes. The suits have changed, they're sleeker, the stroke technique has changed. But the biggest difference is the training. And if you gave, Mark Spitz, for example, the kind of training and the kind of insight into oxygen depletion and, you know, lactic acid buildup and all that we had for Phelps and that we now have for Ledecky, I think you'd see a comparable performance by somebody like Spitz. Blocks change things. there's an article out now about this new distance running shoe by Nike.
What difference do the waves make? I mean, the whole concept of the wave. I mean, you could never come close to winning if you were one of the outside lanes before, right? Now you actually probably could.
No, it varies. It varies in the pool. The hydraulics of pools are crucial, and so you know at the Brazil Olympics there was a definite problem with a couple of the Olympic pools, the racing pools, because they believed that the water circulation that was generated during a race was actually assisting the people on the outside lanes. Water was coming back inside the pool and circulating inside the pool and actually pushing people in the outside lanes. The wave technology and wave suppression technology has gotten a lot better. The hydrologics have a study of hydrologics with respect to the way the water moves inside the pool has gotten a lot better. These are all things that I think go to improve performance. But if you look, I want to go back to the shoe by Nike. Nike's introduced this shoe with a really thick heel that's got some performance material in there that is greatly reducing the impact on the runner's foot, but also returns energy, so it actually springs back slightly. And they're talking about improved times for almost every distance runner as a result of this shoe. The Economist, by the way, has a really good article on the Olympics and drugs. I don't know if it's available online. Maybe Maddie can find it. But talking about how doping is such an issue, and that the assumption is that, you know, especially for people like the sprinters in the late 80s and early 90s before the World Doping Agency got established, that a lot of those people were using drugs that simply couldn't be detected at the time. And in fact, are using techniques now.
By the way,
impossible to detect.
You think Nike got that from, remember PF Flyers that had the wedge in the heel that made you... Manny, there was a wedge in the heel that
yep.
they claim made you run faster, jump higher in the PF Flyers. That was before, Converse were still around, but kids mostly had PF Flyers. And, before you were old enough to get your Converse All-Stars. But yeah, there was a wood, run faster, jump higher. I loved it.
I remember those ads. And remember, I think it was my father making some comment about, you know, targeting children with, you know, technological shoe ads.
As opposed to basketball. Hey, Lou, real quick, have you listened to the show yesterday? The Notre Dame, matter of fact, I was stopped into Tripoli last night and I said, by the way, are you guys going to try and serve pizza to the Northwestern offensive line? They had no idea what I was talking about. But evidently the offensive line at Notre Dame has signed up with some barbecue joint. Now, I guess I was asking Kevin yesterday, you know, how does that even, well, we don't have much time, a little bit. Now, do these guys form a partnership, a trade association, a corporation? Can they use the Notre Dame logo? I mean, there's a lot of questions,
you know,
here.
That's my question. I mean, if I'm the school, I'm saying you guys can sign up for whatever you want, you know, under these NIL name, image, likeness requirements. But all of this is tied to the school. All of this is tied to the school's logo. And so, I mean, if these guys come in and say, yeah, we're the Notre Dame offensive line and we're whatever, if I'm Notre Dame, I'm saying, fine, I want a cut of that.
Well, you know,
under copyright law, you would.
Well, the one place is just giving them free pizza, so are they going to bring a pizza back?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I was a coach, I'd want my guys getting free pizza, but the question is to, you know, who owns what? You know, we've got this rush to get these guys compensation, but all of this occurs in the context of their school and their school's athletic program, which has its own copyright and NIL rights associated with it. So
I think, Lou, right now...
And once that happens, Chief, once the school gets into the middle of it, then you've got Title IX problems.
I think right now, Lou, for most, shall I say, sleazy organizations, it's an incredible way to let the boosters pay people to come to your school without you being a part of it.
Absolutely. This is the Hunter Biden. It's the Hunter Biden artwork.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pay $500 for Hunter Biden's pictures as a way of getting donations to the old man and buying influence with the old man. The big guy, as they refer to him in those Ukrainian emails.
I think if you're allowed into the first thing the recruiter is going to say is, by the way, our offensive line gets, you know, $50,000, which I'm sure it's not that much, from Joe's Barbecue, and that's not the name of the place. The minute you sign up, you're quote part of the offensive line, and you're getting part of that check.
Chief, the kid at Alabama, who I don't believe has started the quarterback, I don't believe has started a game, is up to almost $1 million in endorsements. I sound like Dr. Evil. $1 million, but he's up to $1 million in endorsements right now, without having started taken a starting snap.
Well, Kevin sent us Matty, I don't know if you saw that, the two smoking hot sisters that play basketball for Fresno State. Evidently, they've already got websites. They got how many thousand followers and the whole bit with their makeup, what they're wearing on the court. Oh, they're knocking them dead. Does Fresno State have any kind of a team, or does nobody care? Kevin's convinced you can do better in small towns than you are in Chicago. I don't think
I think there's something to that because it's a closed market. Think of what the endorsements are for a guy in Lincoln, Nebraska, versus a guy, you know, here in Chicago with you know, professional teams and semi-professional teams and several other colleges floating around.
Yeah, I don't think the offensive line at Northwestern gets free pizza at the Tripoli. Just saying.
they do well. Well, maybe they'll get something, but it's a brave new world that I don't think we've really thought out very well.
I think it's right back
and
to
again, there'll be lots of lawyers involved.
I bet it's right back to if you're a lawyer booster, you get to pay a kid $100,000 to do nothing for the summer. That's right where we're back.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, SP Futures up in blue. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 21. Come right back. We're going to talk markets with Mr. Dan Janitas.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lone Rock Bait Station Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Merrill Weber on the board. SP Futures up 4. They were up more than that. We're leaking a little bit. NASDAQ Futures down 20, up 22. When I say leaking, we're only up 4. In the Dow, the only stocks that have any kind of real movement here, we've got Microsoft up 250, and we've got Travelers down 250. Everything else is mostly up a little bit, but not a lot. Well, I got Dow, Dow had earnings last night, Dow Chemical, and they're up 117, so they must have. And we got Goldman Sachs up a $1.50, but they've been way more volatile than that. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing all right. I understand that you bought 30 futures in the Dan account Monday night, and you're smoking a cigar this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually did do quite a bit of buying on Monday, so we are smoking cigars right now.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, it's been a... you know, and if you look at a small cap, which is, you know, where we're focused, we're up almost 5% in the last couple of days. You know, it's the, I know that these rotations, if you will, into various sectors of the market seem to be more, coming in more, you know, in shorter time periods, if you will. So if you want to take advantage of them, you got to be ready to buy on dips. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Well, we, I don't know if I have, well, I guess what we do is we set ourselves, you know what we're doing, Dan, but with the Protect Index program, when you have, I actually put a bunch of people's money to work 2 weeks ago in the Russell at right about the 222 level.
Right.
And, well, and the thing, of course, collapses Friday and Monday, and it goes down to like 214. So we had the, I think we had the 224 puts or 20 somewhere in there. We rolled them down to the 214, so we essentially sold those. Bought the ones out, you know, way down. Now it's come back to 222, so we're right back to where we should be break even, but we're actually up a bunch of money on the put. So, I mean, the, so we're actually by adjusting that, you know, essentially by the whole protected program essentially sets you up to when you roll puts when you're down or roll puts when you're up. That really causes you to buy low and sell high.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, to a certain extent, you're talking about 30-35 delta where if you don't have anything but cash, you go in and buy something, you're talking about 100 delta. I mean, you're doing more. We're just doing routine adjustments that essentially get us somewhat to the same place. But no, we're real happy with that. I mean, everybody else, you know, who just bought it at 222 is basically thankfully back to flat, and we're actually up something. So that's nice. But yeah, but I don't, it's hard for, I'm going to say Monday night, Dan, I felt, you know, this could be another one of the myriad buy the dip kind of things, but I just get this odd feeling that the day I decided to just, without any kind of a, something to lean on, to just run in and buy something, it's going to be the one day it's going to be 87 all over again or something. You know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, I think it's because we feel, we're so long into this recovery rally, longer than, than we've seen in our lifetime. So it's, and I'm taking out the period of what I'll call the COVID year and a half, if you will, but we're, you know, going back to 08, we're still in the recovery phase, and it's, you know, it feels mature, but it isn't totally mature yet. And some of the reasons I believe that we're still, you know, we still have room to go are, people like architects, engineers, contractors are very, very busy. I mean, these are the leaders, if you will, in economic recovery, and these guys are still very busy. So anyone I know in this firm, you know, that works in these firms says they have more work than they can handle right now. And certainly what we've spoken about before in terms of infrastructure, we're on a roll there as well. And if you can stay away from the political discussions, we know that we're going to see more funding for infrastructure, and that's going to continue to, you know, it's going to build on itself. And I think as we've spoken before, some of the concern comes in and inflation, and you start seeing in certain, you know, again, in certain parts of the country, just the affordability factor in housing, which certainly in the Boston area is, I don't know how people afford to live in Boston on the prices and, of real estate, but there are concerns, but I think the underlying tone is extremely positive, and I think the fundamentals are positive. The companies that we've spoken to that are, you know, on the verge of announcing earnings are generally very favorable, and I think we're seeing, we're going to see a really strong earnings period here. So that builds on itself, and the other thing that helps build that is low rates. So, you know, with the 10-year now at 128, I, you know, rates aren't budging, you know, and that, and, you know, I don't know whether it's going to be a flip of the switch, but I don't think so. I think there's enough momentum in the economy to keep this thing going.
Dan, by the way, this is bad radio, but I agree with everything you said, except for one thing. How do you ever figure out what's real in this mess? I mean, Maddie was telling me on the way in that at every place he saw last night, you couldn't get a reservation. All right, now, that's true. I mean, Maddie tells the truth. How do you know whether in the area where there's 30 restaurants and 8 of them closed, is the total better than it was, you know, a year ago, February? I don't know. I mean, the whole thing, if you walk by a place and it appears jammed, okay. I mean, are people spending as much? Is it as jammed as it was then or before? Is this a place? I mean, I don't know how you, the head of Chipotle Grill came out yesterday, and I don't know if you listened to it, but they had earnings. And these earnings, there's no filter whatsoever for, price increases versus real sales. And right now, this week, I don't think it makes any difference. Like you, Dan, it's just good numbers. But the guy from Chipotle came out and he basically said, we have pricing power. Now, did enough small places fold that we're even more dependent on Chipotle than we were before? And Steve Leisman was doing, or whatever the guy was doing the thing, because these guys could raise their prices right now today 10%. It wouldn't make any difference, which I think it probably would make a little difference somewhere. It always makes a little difference. But, these are people that don't have any economic education, it doesn't appear. There's always something, right? But if you raise your prices 10% and your volume only goes down 1%, then I guess it's really good for you, because it is. But at some point, you're going to raise them 10% and your volume's going to drop 11, and it's not a good thing, right? We're not there yet, I don't think.
No.
But at what point do you say, is any of this stuff real? I mean, I'm looking at this, the Fed balance sheet here. They put more money in the last 6 weeks than they really have at any time other than the COVID first day. Why? What are they seeing? What are they driving? I could see them, you know, not wanting to cause a wave when we're just kind of getting back going. I could see them not wanting to cause a wave and keeping it flat or even increasing it a little bit just because, you know, they're in for a penny, in for a pound. But this dramatic $125 billion in one week, what is that for? I mean, can anybody tell me what possesses those guys when they're out telling people they're doing 120 a month and they do 125 in a week? Dan, what is the reason? What's going on here? I mean, and I know that as much as you and I still love the market and are putting money to work every day for people the best we can, and by the way, successfully, I think, I don't get this. I mean, the only person that would buy this 10-year bond is if you were tied into the Fed and you knew they were going to buy 30 seconds after you did. No way would Dan Janinas ever put anybody in a 10-year bond at 1.2%. Yet people are buying it because they know somebody's buying it right behind them, which of course leads you into, do they really know the Fed's buying? Or, I mean, is the Fed just giving money to some people? The disparity in the amount of cash some people seem to have now versus other people, to me, is dramatic, and I somehow this has got to blow. I don't know. Maybe it may not be for 20 years, but it just doesn't seem like the right direction to me. And I don't know where to. Doesn't mean you can't. You shouldn't buy on Monday night. You should, right? In retrospect, anyway.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, I absolutely agree with you, and I think it's too much. And I think that, you know, maybe the brakes don't need to be put on. You know, we don't need to be stopping this altogether, but certainly slowing. You know, slowing the activity, the buybacks and all that to, you know, in a controlled fashion, if you will, so that it doesn't become a slam the brakes on at the end if, you know, I think the thing we do have in our favor, if I had to say anything, is just sort of looking around the rest of the world, you know, and the ECB coming out again, you know, coming out this morning, you know, the concerns concerns for inflation overseas as well, over in Europe and all that. And I still think they're behind us in the recovery. I think there's more recovery to be had, overseas. And so from that point of view, maybe, you know, that might be part of what they're seeing, but you're right. I mean, it depends on how you look at the data overall, but I think looking at Main Street, whether it be the local restaurants or looking at, you know, sort of funding for big projects and infrastructure and all that, there's, you know, things are moving in the right direction, but I don't know how, if we need that much help at this point. I mean, I think there's a certain point where it's going to be we're going to be paying for it down the road. So I'm definitely on board with you there. I think in the meantime, looking at the opportunities in the market, you know, one of the names that I haven't mentioned in a little while, but it's I think it's a good example of a company that's sort of blown through any period and has done really well is, again, it's a small cap, micro cap company, Thunderbird Entertainment. They do both animation and they do what they call factual, Highway Through Hell, and some of the shows you see on the Weather Channel are theirs, but they also do animation, and they've got a new you know, theme for cartoons for kids, and that's a little more educational. And this firm is extremely well managed. They have positive free cash flow. Their earnings per share have grown 52% over the last year, and yet their stock, which reached a high, you know, trading over the counter, it reached a high of 5. Is now at 3.3.
Dan, did they get their NASDAQ listing yet, or no?
They're not, and that is exactly the reason that that's the reason that they've sold off, because there are some investors who had a time frame where they were looking to, you know, it has to get a NASDAQ listing before we're able to go to the next step, or we're just going to get out. So people are selling, but not based on fundamentals. They're selling because of this listing, and the listing is coming. It just is, they're trying to time it in the right way that they're not going to be getting ahead of themselves. So here's an opportunity where you've got a solid company. Really doesn't matter too much what the Fed is doing, because they're in an industry that's, you know, did well during COVID.
What's the symbol again? What's the symbol again?
They're going to continue to grow, and they're going to continue to move. And as they grow, I think you're going to benefit. So these are the kind of names I think to be looking at in an environment like this, where it does seem like things are toppy, and it does seem like there could be we don't want to be stuck fully invested in a turnaround. We want to be invested. We want to be diversified into some industries that should do well. We do have a pullback, if you will, in the buybacks, and they should do well regardless of, you know, inflationary scares. So, big picture, yes, I absolutely agree. But you know, in terms of what we're doing is we're looking for those opportunities that have been left behind, if you will, or that are still, you know, that have sold off, and you know, we liked it at 4 and 5, and we got to love it at 3.
What's the symbol again, Dan?
Symbol is THBRF.
TH or PH?
T as in Thunderbird.
All right.
THBRF.
I'm gonna say that, unfortunately, you are certainly involved in the markets to a huge extent. I don't know that you have a brokerage firm to the extent where the amount of leaning that the FINRA is now doing on people that are buying these stocks that are not NASDAQ listed is totally uncalled for in my mind, but it's there. For somebody, I mean, I do pretty much all discretionary trading for my people. I mean, we're in a plan for them. And it would be actually reasonably difficult for me to buy a bunch of stocks that are not all that are not listed in NASDAQ. They're really putting the screws on people doing that, which is that's probably why you're seeing that thing not go up.
Yeah, and I think this year, I think you know we've seen more of those restrictions coming this year than we have in the past. And but that being said, you still want to be able to be in when the listing comes. So
yes,
there's going to be a nice pop. And this is just one example. I mean, there are other examples, you know, going back to Monday, a number of the names that we have that we've spoken about even last week on the infrastructure side had sold off and have had a nice bounce in the last few days, a really nice bounce up 6-8%. NASDAQ, MTZ, SWM, the AIMC, NYRG, which we spoke about last time. They've all had nice rallies since Monday, and they're names that I think will benefit from infrastructure, and do benefit from what we're seeing in terms of the growth in our economy. And we have to kind of stay away from what we're hearing on the political side And so that's why on a day like Monday where we do see a sell-off, I do think that those are still the days to be buying, especially those names that you have strong, where you have high conviction.
Well, Dan, what, I mean, you and I are old enough to have gone through the 99-2000 fiasco. And if you have the good stuff, you are not, even if the rest of the stuff goes to zero, which
right.
some of it did, you're not, you're affected some. I mean, you can't essentially get away unscathed because people who have margin problems are going to have to sell the good stuff as well as the bad stuff, right? I mean, it's just unfortunately the way the business works. I'm going to ask you this because I don't know what to do here, to be honest with you. That there's such a fork in the road, take it, says Yogi, between the stocks that, you know, I deal with, the bigger price, the more traditional stocks, and I include the Googles, the people in there, because they've become somewhat traditional, they are traditional at this point. I mean, so it's not like I'm not doing anything that's in the last 20 years. I mean, that's not at all what I'm going for. But some of those ones like some of these COVID stocks, and some of these, I'm going to say the new dot bombs, for lack of a better term. And Dan, I don't know what the story is with those things. I mean, I've seen some. I'm not going to name them. Last night I had earnings on a few, and some of the guys that I do business with were calling me. And I said, what are you doing? This thing's 100 times revenue. I mean, good Lord.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I also know that one of them is going to end up being the next Amazon, but there's 10 of them. The other nine, I don't know. You know, I mean, we're talking about companies that are 5 and 6 times where I would even want to look at them. So, I mean, the idea that, you know, on a Monday, a stock is 450 and it's down to 440, how it being a raving buy, I don't know.
I would agree with you on the names that fall in that category that tend to be, you know, the larger cap and more of the, you know, like you said, I still see them as newer names, if you will, or companies that don't have as much operating history. But those companies that do have the operating history, that are more value plays, that you've liked at higher levels, I do think it's an opportunity. So you do have, you're right, there is a fork in the road, and you have to differentiate between the, going back to the late 90s, the dot-coms and the steel companies or the steel companies that make it through the downturns.
Dan, real quick, normally, I would say, you just ignore those, and you and I should talk about the ones that you like and I like, and that's what we should put our people in. But when we're talking about, I'll blob one of the names out there. I mean, Zoom is going to buy a company for $14 billion of their own stock. And I got Zoom worth $3-4 billion tops, and yet somebody's going to take, you know, $14 billion as payment for their place. I mean, I don't see how these places that are pushing now $300-500 billion in or even $150 billion in, quote, market cap, if they drop 80-90%, I don't know that the stuff you and I have, I think will hang in there, but I don't necessarily want to have that day without any puts either. I mean, it's not like we're not going to be... I mean, I think if Bitcoin goes down to 10,000, it's going to cause a shudder, even though I don't think Bitcoin was ever worth anything from day one. But still, I mean, what did they say last week? When it went from 31,000 to 29, it was... how many billion dollars came out of? I mean, these got to be shocks. The numbers are so big, it's scary.
I think it would impact the larger cap companies across the board. The smaller ones that I've, like some of the names that I've mentioned, believe it or not, some of these names can do well on down days like that. And that's where the diversification comes in, and that's where I think that's the benefit of looking at a name and really knowing it well. Knowing that, because, you know, in most environments you might get hurt by the lack of liquidity, but in an environment like this where we have liquidity, things are good. And if liquidity dries up because of an event that drives, you know, some of the mega names down, you may just sit steady for a period of time. You may not be a lot of price movement. You're not going to necessarily see people selling Thunderbird when they're selling Bitcoin. You know, and that's why I think the diversification is really important in an environment that, you know, is at some point going to change. So, but those names, those names that you mentioned, I have the same concerns about those, and those are not the names that I would be in now. And you know, I wanted to mention one that I think is a bond, because there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about bonds, but Genworth, that I've mentioned before.
Yeah, that sounded, it was interesting.
A 2-year bond that pays 5%. It's a property casualty company. The bonds mature in August of 2023. They just redeemed a very large issue yesterday of another bond issue of over $500 million. And that obviously is good news for this company. Stock was up 7%. Now, this is a steady, eddy, old, boring insurance company that's been around since 1871. But to get 5% for 2 years and to have had that, you know, that sort of validation yesterday when they redeemed the bonds is really good news. So here's a company that
Dan, when you say
tremendous return over what you're going to get, you know, other places in terms of, you know, if you're looking for yield, certainly it's going to give you substantial yield advantage, but it's going to also give you that sort of protection or provide that protection that you're not going to get from playing in the Bitcoins and the, you know,
Dan, when you say when you say redeem, the bonds were due and the guys came up with the money.
Sure, yeah, they paid off a higher interest bearing note that was due yesterday, and you know, they're it was a not that it was necessarily a surprise, but it lowers their, you know, their cost of capital because they're
okay. So they didn't go out in the market and redeem it early or anything like that, or use an early capture. It was just plain due.
Right. Yeah. No. That was part of it. So that's why the you know, the excitement in the stock price, because they're able to refinance, if you will, to take out a higher 7 5/8, I think, with the bonds that were redeemed. So, they were taken out early.
Does anybody use sinking funds anymore or no?
You know, in the municipal bond area, those were very popular years ago. I'm not sure they're as popular, but they're, you know, some of the municipalities required you to set up this fund so that the capital would be there when it came to, when the bonds would mature, and sometimes they got paid off early. And those were win-wins for you know, bond investors. Municipal market right now isn't paying much. I mean, you're getting very little. We're not getting much in the corporate world, but getting even less in municipal. So,
Dan, who's the buyer at these levels? Who are buyers at this level? Just insurance companies?
Insurance companies, and then remember, there are funds, there are ETFs that are still required to have a certain percentage in you know, whatever category that, you know, whatever asset category they're in. So if they're in short municipals and they can only buy investment grade, you know, your choices are slim.
Well, that's why I'm always anxious to have you on, but do you think that the Fed buying more in the last few weeks is because there's no other buyers?
No, there are definitely buyers out there, and there will always be buyers because, you know, like I said, there are funds set up, there are pension, large pension plans that have, you know, requirements in terms of having a certain amount of investment grade bonds. There are mutual funds still, there's ETFs, there are categories that have to be satisfied. So even though this may not be an attractive time to be buying bonds because there's very little yield, there are plenty of people who are, you know, there are plenty of funds that are required. So there's going to be a constant, there's going to be a steady demand. And as people rebalance from a stock market that continues to go up, and I don't mean necessarily an individual rebalancing, but a pension plan rebalancing, a large corporate plan, a large municipal plan rebalancing, they're going to be putting more money into bonds. So there's always going to be that steady demand, and then foreign investors, because they still view our market as a safe haven. So regardless of, and I think it's becoming more of a safe haven as time goes on. So there is a steady demand. I think their reason for buying is just they're looking at the Fed's buying is that they're looking at those areas that have been hurt by the market, but it isn't really what we're seeing necessarily day to day. And as we get past COVID, if you will, as we move into this new environment, we see that a lot of people do have money and people are spending and people are getting out. And, you know, maybe you don't have a few of those restaurants have closed, but like you said, Matt was saying that now there's a waiting line for the other places. So those are positive signs for the economy. And I don't think we need quite as much allowance, if you will, from the Federal Reserve.
Dan, do you have going. A? Have you checked? Well, you probably are too smart to do this. Have you checked the Florida? Who got all the PPP loans?
You mean whether they were?
There's a list.
You're the right people, if you will.
Yeah,
I haven't seen a specific list of those.
Well, there is one.
People, I do know that there were people who got them. For example, I know there were some resorts and golf courses and that sort of thing that got them that maybe didn't need them. I know being in the Boston area, a number of the colleges, I know Harvard got some that probably didn't need it, but I think some of them ended up having to give it back, and some just gave it back.
Some were embarrassed to give it back by the news media.
Yes.
But if you... I mean, I like you, so I shouldn't actually push you this direction, but if you went and looked, you would be stunned. I've actually been doing some study in there the last few days. Why I'm doing this, Dad, I have no idea. Just to aggravate myself. Guess how many firms got money in the state of Illinois?
Probably a lot fewer, I imagine.
656,000.
Oh.
With a total of $38 billion.
Oh.
That's a real number.
Yeah, that is a real number.
And, when you start talking about, Maddie was talking about the restaurants that were crowded last night, the ones that made it and were able to do any sort of, the number you wanted to be, if you could do like 70% of your old business.
Right.
You got massive amounts of money from the government. We're talking $500,000. You know, a couple times, and you're supposedly paying people, right? But nobody's checking you on that. So how the hell exactly do all these places have no employees if they got all this money from the government to keep people being paid?
Right.
So how does that work?
Good point.
I'm going to say the only thing, some people are trying to track you down today to put some money to work, I know. And some of these things look great. The only thing I can see there that would create a risk, and wouldn't be a risk that I would shy away from, is if all of a sudden all this infrastructure stuff blew up in Congress and there never was one. But I don't know if that's going to happen. I really don't think it is.
If you've driven around on some of the roads, certainly like I mentioned in the Boston area, and I'm sure it's true with any suburban area of any major city, we're going to be seeing a lot of cars and body shops from potholes, problems, getting stuck in potholes and all that. So, bridges that are, in desperate need of being repaired. So I think that demand is going to, just people getting around. I think there is a lot of support, and I think it's going to get through, and it's a question of, political, issues that delay it, but I think it's still going to happen.
I would agree with you, and I just hope that these guys, they plan for something that's going to be good going forward and not just fix the street they should have fixed 3 years ago. I mean, it doesn't get anybody in. I mean, obviously, if you're driving down the street, it helps you. But in terms of planning and making the future better, it doesn't do anything. It just means you should have done it 3 years ago. Right?
Right. I agree.
Anyway, Dan, take care of yourself. Guys, again, some people are calling you today, I think. Maybe I'll even track you down. But S&P Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 22. Thank you. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. I'm just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 275. NASDAQ futures up 23. We're still up here. Dow futures up 36. We're up a little more earlier, but we've had two huge days in a row on the way up. So today we have Thursday and Friday to complete the week, obviously, because Monday was a big down day, and we're up. We've made that back and more. So we'll see if we continue to do that. We've got over in Europe. These guys weren't up as much as us yesterday. Now they've got a mixed bag here today. The DAX, which has been lagging, is up 144, so that's almost full 1%. The FTSE, which was ahead of everybody yesterday, is only up 1 point, so that's unchanged. CAC around up 46.7, so they're all sort of evening out. If you look at the last 2 days, they're both up like maybe 2% or so, which may 1.75%. So they've kind of evened out over there, but they're all up again today. Nikkei up 159.6%, Shanghai up 12.3%. Hang Seng, which is catching up for being down last week, is up another 499, 1.8%, because obviously they were involved a little bit in the politics between them and us, with our administration saying we should be careful of Hong Kong. They got beat up for a few days, now they're coming back. So we don't, they have 4 or 5 days, everybody forgets what anybody says, and it's kind of crazy stuff. DAX up 286.8%, this is yesterday, I'm sorry, Dow Jones yesterday up 286.8%, S&P up 35.8%, NASDAQ up 133.9%. So we were up across the board again yesterday, just like we were on Tuesday, although not as much. 10-year. Minus a basis point, 1.26, still down way from the 175 number we were a few weeks ago. Bund, minus 0.42. So, you know, it's, with their inflation rate has got to be 3 or 4%, which puts them, what, minus 5 on the interest rate? That's kind of a lot. Japan, 0.015 positive. UK, 0.59 positive. Oil up 40 cents, 70.70. Brent up 42 cents, 72.65. So we're back up over 70 on West Texas. Natural gas down 4 cents, 3.91, but still pushing that $4 number. RBOB up a penny, 2.22. We've got gold down 6.60, 17.96. Silver down 13 cents, 25.12. Copper up 5 cents, 4.32. Yesterday, the gold stocks were, gold was down and copper stocks were up again. So, and for the whole last 2 years, copper's been the place to be, not gold or silver. Don't know if that's going to change, but don't worry, it's changing right now. And we've got Bitcoin back up over 30, well, it was up over 32, but 31,980, up 240. That's higher than, obviously up, was down almost as far as 29.5 on Monday, but has bounced back pretty good. Maddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The earlier investigation on the Edens that had it closed for a shooting that happened this morning on the Edens. That's been cleared, so the Edens is back open, and no resulting congestion from that, so that's
and
good
no
news.
Arrest.
And no arrest yet. We'll see if that changes, but no issues on the Edens in either direction. Kennedy, starting to see some heavy traffic building there, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford, all similar. Traffic volume starting to grow here, but no accidents or delays out of the ordinary to speak of. So good news for a Thursday morning now that the Edens is back open. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful late July day here. Clouds early, then more sunshine later on, a high of 80. Right now it's overcast and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 106 today. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, White Sox lost big to the Twins last night, 7-2. Cubs dropped an extra innings game down in St. Louis, losing to the Cardinals 3-2 in 10. Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 6-4. Chief.
We have Mr. Janet Flanagan. Janet, are you with us?
I am, Tom. Good to talk to you.
We have the jobless claims are up again, Maddie. What is the deal with that? I mean, are we seeing, obviously every place you go, people are dying to find people at $10, $12, $13 an hour. Does this mean that people making more getting laid off, or what exactly, how can they both be happening where you can't wait to find people at one end and at the other end? Why would these claims ever be going up, given all the jobless claims rose to 419,000 last week. They were supposed to be 350. Are we seeing a flip between we're laying off people at 70 and trying to find them at 12, or what are we doing? I honestly don't understand this at all. Do you?
Well, it puts a surplus of people who are looking for jobs, which is sort of, you know, part of the narrative that they're trying to sell. I guess it would make sense that if you can get rid of some higher-priced people and replace them with people at the lower end, that's going to result in unemployment claims by the ones near the top. But I don't know if that's consistent with the narrative, you know, in all directions. That doesn't square kind of with the story we're being told. So I'm not sure. I'd like to hear what both of you say about it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Is it, Maddie, you're more in tune with the work, back to work kind of crowd than I am between you and your lovely bride. I mean, are people refusing to go back to work? Are people getting smaller spaces and just telling half of them not to come back? I mean, something's going on here, it appears.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to every question, but I can tell you just anecdotally, my wife's company, they decided not to renew their big lease over at Madison and I think Wacker over there. So they're just saying everyone can work from home indefinitely, whereas my company still is under lease at our downtown office building on Madison and Clark, and we're returning mandatory 2 days a week beginning after Labor Day, and then they're going to assess it from there and decide if they want to come back, you know, full time, or if they're going to let people do kind of a hybrid schedule or whatnot. And that's when I was talking to some people at a conference last night downtown. That was kind of consistent with what I was hearing. A lot of people were either basically just, we're working from home indefinitely now and we're not going to renew the big office space, or we're returning back in a kind of a hybrid fashion.
Just from being on this earth a while, John, you and I, I'm going to say two things. And Maddie, you can say it. This sounds like an old guy talking. I'm going to say two things, and I will bet you a dollar, again, a second bet of the day, that I'm right, that if there's a team of six people and four in the office and two are home, the two at home don't feel comfortable and the four there wonder where the other two people are because they're not helping. And I'm going to say that the day the boss walks in and sees all the desks empty, he's going to say, I'm here, everybody else get back here. I mean, that's just my read of human personality. And take a shot at me, both of you.
No, I think when you're talking about, like, for example, my company, I think that's exactly how it's going to go down. It's going to, when the boss is there and sees a bunch of empty desks, they're going to expect everyone to be there. But the other scenario where companies have decided just completely just to not to renew the huge downtown office space because they're like, hey, we're hitting our numbers, or we're close enough, or we're better, or we're the same, or whatever, and we can save all this money in this way. How do you explain that?
Well, I think there's a lot of jobs that for the whole 100 years, people could have been 1 or 2 days at home, because those are the 2 days they only talk to clients, or they only do something, or they're actually on the road, and they're closer to the clients from home than they are downtown. I mean, I think that's been the case for forever, where people had to go in when they really shouldn't have had to. I mean, right? I mean, I'm not all against that at all. I mean, hell, why would Audrey have to go to a real estate place? I mean, she owns her own place. It's out of her house. The last thing she needs to do is check in some morning somewhere and then turn around back to take a client out the other way, right?
But well, that's how I've always felt for me, like, as in sales. You're given, it's the only position where you're given a number, and you either, it's very black and white. You either hit your number or you don't. And if you hit your number, you're safe. And if you don't, you might not be. And that's it. And you know that going into it, and that's why, you know, people do it, because you get paid very well when you do well. But there's a scoreboard. So for salespeople, typically the bosses couldn't care less where you are. You either hit your number or you don't.
But part of it's an industry.
So what's the point? But now if you're in operations, or if you're in marketing, or if you're in, you know, anything like that, then I could see where you know, certainly if you're a product person or engineering or anything like that, there's a lot of collaboration that's going on. There's a lot of think tanking that's going on, whiteboarding. Then I think there's a lot of value in being in the office with people.
Well, there's very few people in anything. I mean, even me, I make investment decisions for people, but every single one I do, I call up my brother. One of the guys is in here in the office, from the same office as me. I say, what do you think of this one? Am I not? I mean, I would have real problems being an island. And I think most salespeople, I mean, even you, when you put together a proposal for a new place, it's going to require your tech guys to help you, other people to help you. If you're not around, I'm going to say 40% of what you do is just one-on-one with clients, and the other is part of a sales team. And I don't see how you do the team part from home if they as well as if you're there.
I can tell you that it made no difference to me.
Really?
None. Now, I'm not saying that's true for everyone. And I know I'm going to have to go back to the office, and I don't care. It's fine. I've been coming downtown every day during the entire pandemic doing the show.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me. I've rode the train every day during the entire pandemic. So it doesn't matter to me either way. But for me, it makes no difference, because we have processes in place for all of that. I have a queue that I submit for legal review. I have a product review, and the tech teams review everything, operations. I don't need to be in the same room with them ever. And a lot of them don't live in Chicago. They live all over the country. So I don't see them anyway, unless they fly in for a meeting or something like that. So it's all done via phone or email or whatever, and it just doesn't matter. I don't need to be sitting face to face with them ever.
I've never been with
clients. It helps to be face to face at times, but I'm on the road anyway, so I mean, it doesn't matter if I'm in an office or not.
Well, I've never been with a place where, you know, I was in Chicago and my entire tech. I mean, I was never with a Boeing, you know, where they're in Chicago, and yet the entire manufacturing thing is in Everett, Washington.
See, I've only worked in companies where they're completely global. So okay. I deal with people in Europe, I deal with people in India, I deal with people in Poland, where we have to do a lot of calls first thing in the morning, because in Poland, you know, Warsaw time, it's end of the day. And then we have people all over the United States from coast to coast. So it just doesn't matter where we're at.
Well, I think it matters the way the company's set up. And for you guys, yeah, I guess it really doesn't make
sense. Well, I would say I'm speaking for bigger companies.
I don't know how you could track the numbers, you know, of unemployment filings based on the track record of the places they were working for, as far as whether they were contracting office space or what other pressures they were experiencing. But I would bet that a lot of companies are looking for any way possible to cut their fixed expenses. And if that means shaking things out and saying people are going to work from home in this configuration, number of hours, increase the number of hours, whatever, and those who can cut it and those who excel will be kept, and those who can't won't. And in the meantime, they shave their rent expenses and their utilities and everything else. And they've also decided which among all of their staff they want to make a long-term commitment. And if you don't cut it, you know, if you don't hit that number by whatever, you know, means that are available to you, you're gone. And I would bet that some of the pressure here is coming from corporations or businesses that have decided, we don't want everybody coming in. We want a bare bones operation, and we can always expand if we have to, and we may in the future, but in the meantime, we're getting down to basics, and we don't really care what that does to our staff numbers. It's all about a completely different formula now.
You see, my concern with that is, and I've always been somewhat of a purist on this, that if you had the right amount of people to start with, everybody should bring something to the table. And you can't, I mean, I guess you could, well, the Cubs can't get rid of a left fielder and hire a left fielder and get the same guy back. So at any level, it makes you wonder, there is a learning curve at every place. And the more you get, I mean, I know that he's been on the show a couple of times, my buddy John Lee's always worked for these super international places, you know, like a Anderson Consulting that's going to go to Greece and put in a, you know, a software system for the aircraft tower or some kind of crap. I mean, these massive kind of places, even bigger than your place. You have all this stuff is happening kind of, but everybody, and if somebody buys that place and says, okay, looks to me like you guys are a little fat, you better get rid of 10-15% of the people, which people do. Well, it's easy to get rid of people that you never met, right? Plus, you have no real idea of what they bring to the table anyway. I mean, because you never met them. I mean, when I got canned from Pullman, when it was bought by Will Brader Fry and everybody downtown got canned, I never even met this guy. He goes, your services are no longer needed. He goes into the spiel, and I said, you know, skip the spiel. You know, this is me being, you know, I was not as reserved. I probably thought the same way when I was younger, but my tongue wasn't as reserved.
Among the many things we've lost with age.
Yeah, I basically told the guy, I said, skip the spiel. You don't even know what my services are or could be or were. I said, just give me my package and I'm out of here. But I don't need to talk to you. I don't even know who the hell you are. Just give me the paperwork. I'm gone. I mean, what was the point of him? I mean, he didn't know what I did for the place and didn't care. So, but I say, you know, for them to go out and put an ad in the paper the next day to try and replace me. I mean, could you replace a senior financial analyst? Yeah. But are you going to get somebody who's worked on three contracts and done four bids and all the other stuff that they never do? Who I even did? I mean, when you do that, you sort of miss people. But the numbers here, I just heard you this morning say that the places you went last night are mobbed. I don't know where I can find a July 21st of where would it have to be now, 2019. The total restaurant sales and bar sales of, let's say, everybody within 2 miles each direction of State and Madison, which would include the Gold Coast and the New West Side and everything. I don't know where I can find that number and compare it to what looks like it's busy today with the places that have closed, with McCormick Place not being open, with, you know, who knows if the Conrad Hilton's open, but are there five bars all open or are there only three open? I mean, I have no idea what the number really is, man. I mean, I know what they want me to see and I know what I do see. I mean, I went downstairs last night, met some guys after working out. Place was pretty crowded. But in the back of my mind, I'm going, yeah, the place on the corner is closed. Series isn't open. They better be crowded. They're the only place open. You know, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know how to compare. And I'm not saying anybody's wrong. They're right. They're telling other people, they're telling themselves what they see. But I don't know what those numbers mean. I don't know what Chipotle Grill numbers are yesterday. Are the tacos up 15% from last year? Or are they selling three times as many tacos? I don't know, but it's a different number. I mean, I think we're never going to get these numbers, Jen, is my feeling.
No, and I would like to see a breakdown on unemployment claims as far as age and gender, experience, fields that the people formerly worked in, you know, where they were on the earnings scale. I'd like to see all of those numbers parsed in a way that would allow you to see, are there trends here? What kind of trends are we talking about? Are there any observable trends at all? But well, you don't get that, and I think that's key here to try to make sense out of all of this.
But I would say that from a lot of the stuff I look at, well, just because I like doing some of the stuff, and Audrey's been doing a little work in her place, I'm going to say that anybody... Well, Maddie, I think you'd agree with me on this, is nobody wanted any workmen, well, I won't say nobody, but mostly nobody, wanted any workmen in their place from last, well, whatever, St. Patrick's Day through probably St. Patrick's Day of this year. I mean, if your house needed to be painted, I suppose if you had a big plumbing leak, the plumber came over because you're going to live like that. But basically everything else got put off, right? Maybe your car repairs got put off. Everything got put off. So it's not surprising to me that every single car, I mean, if you're not waiting 2 days to see a mechanic, I mean, you're not in the right area. And that everybody who is willing to remodel somebody's kitchen has got kitchens from here to the next 5 years. I mean, I think we're absolutely a year behind in that stuff. So it doesn't surprise me that everybody there is mobbed. But I don't know how you can go back and eat a dinner from last July and get that back. You know what I'm saying? I think it's very scattered no matter every industry you look. I don't know how you can put a total number on it. I really don't.
Well, there's changes in behavior too that I wonder about the number of people going out to eat who used to do it more regularly and maybe are thrilled to be able to do it at all now, but when they see what the prices are, they might pull back, and that there's contractions lurking around the corner in all of these explosions of activity that I think people are waking up to the fact that this is not a return to any kind of normal that we remember. It's starting at a different point, and it's going to change how people spend whatever income they have left over, if they have income at all. And I do think it's extremely unsettled, and a number like that for the unemployment claims makes me think it's far more unsettled than even I could have imagined.
So I just think people get out of the habit. I mean, when I'll take myself, and I live alone. I was, three nights a week at the Tripoli because I'd come home after, managing money all day and talking to some clients after the close, maybe hitting the club. I get home and it's 6:30. I'm not cooking. I go get a perfectly good sandwich down at the Tripoli and maybe talk to somebody for a little bit, watch the Cubs. Why the hell do I want to sit in my living room? And I'm every 2 weeks now. I just got out of the habit of it. I mean, I'll whip something up from the fridge. I mean, I think that we see people trudging to the Rock Island at 10 after 5. The 5:10 train is mobbed going south. The fact that the train is mobbed when it used to be empty is massive progress, no doubt about that. But I don't know that those people are used to, are we going to stop at the Series, two nights a week for a drink on the way home or an appetizer? Or we just say, you get out of the habit of doing stuff, John, I think.
Yep, I agree. And it's hard to lure people back once they develop a different habit and they're happy with it.
Well, plus
they're saving money too, so.
Well, plus, in this particular area, I've had two people on the last couple of weeks say, I'm going to get out of downtown while it's still light out. I mean, they're terrified of this. I mean, this thing this morning, we're not normal news here, and we're not traffic cops, but I'm going to say that the idea that there was a shooting up at Old Orchard, I don't want to be the owner of Old Orchard Shopping Center this morning. The thought that this kind of violence can find you at a place you thought was perfectly safe. I mean, I would not go. I'm saying it wouldn't stop me from going to Old Orchard today, but what if it stops 10 people saying I thought this neighborhood was safe and now it's not?
Well, I, when I came down your way last week, Tom, and we were looking around your immediate area, and this is the heart of the financial district of Chicago, there's almost no storefront retail places of any kind at all. The only kind of signage is retail space available for rent, whatever.
Yeah.
And even when, a couple years ago, when there were businesses there, the businesses would close at 5 or 6 o'clock, but they would have lighting. They had signs of life inside. They often had people in there mopping the floors. There were signs walking down the street that these were not just shells of, office space, but they were still thriving places, and there were people coming and going all night long. Now, I can't imagine what that looks like at night because it looks pretty creepy during the day. There's no sign of life, no neon signs, no nothing, and that must change the whole impression you have of walking down the street in the heart of the financial district.
Well, I mean, New York. I mean, I remember I haven't been in a while, but there were neighborhoods in New York, Manny, that I took a cab. I had to meet these people from dinner, so I take a cab and I go down this very vibrant area. It's nothing but storefronts. There's people all over the place. I take the cab back. I thought I was going through like 1938 Berlin or someplace. Everybody had the huge metal, I'll use the term, garage door in front of
them. Oh, yeah, the riot brick gates.
Yeah, and I walked through. I wouldn't even know where I was. I would have been, if I wasn't in a cab, I would have been the only person on the street. I wouldn't have wanted to walk down there. I mean, back when I was young and strong, I wouldn't have wanted to walk down there unless I had, like, a machine gun with me. I mean, what the whole place just... What they used to say, roll up the sidewalks at night? I mean, they pretty much did. I mean, is Chicago going to get like that? What are we going to do when it gets dark at 4 o'clock? I mean...
That's creepy, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is. SP Futures down 275, NASDAQ Futures up 10. We're open for another update today. We'll see. We don't want things going... We don't want no crash. So let's hang in there. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.